Hey guys, it's Drew, letting you know that Tom and Chi is proud to sponsor the Court of Nerds and Grand Rapids Comic Con. Stop by their setup in the main hall for $4 grilled cheese classics with fresh tomatoes, mozzarella, and gooey cheddar. $4 barbecue and bacon grillers and $4 GCDs, Tom and Chi's fantastic grilled cheese donut. Top it all off with the grilling joke. Comic-Con special GCD with blueberry mascarpone, graham crackers, and pop rocks. Eat what's fun, Tom and Chi. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to a very special episode of Court of Nerds. I'll be your solo host for this one. It's Drew along for the ride with you. Our guest today, you may know about 17 to 30 of the comics that he's currently writing, let alone his past work. Today we'll be talking a lot about Aftershock's Dark Arc with its writer and creator, Cullen Bunn. Cullen, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
So I've got to start with the question that's on all of our minds. Where in the world did you come up with the premise for Dark Arc?
You know, it's a great question. I'm not 100% sure I can even answer it. It's one of those things that just sitting around brainstorming, I came up with the title. And it just kind of sprung out of that, to be honest with you. I started with a title, and then from there it just sort of ballooned out into this idea of what would happen if there were an ark like Noah's Ark, only for all the most horrible things in the world, the monsters, the monsters and the vampires and the manticores and all these terrible creatures were stuck on this ark together. And what would that look like?
Now, did you know that Juan Doe was the guy you wanted to do this book with the whole time, or did that come up later on?
That came up later on. I put this pitch together a long time ago, or a few years ago at least. And I didn't really consider the artist at the time. Honestly, I didn't know that any publisher would be crazy enough to try this book. But when I took it to Aftershock and they liked it, they brought Juan into the picture. So that was their suggestion to me. He was the artist they brought, and I'm a fan of his work, so I was excited to work with him.
It seems like you two have really connected on this book. There's a really strong vibe. Did you guys just sit down and write like a 20-mile-long list of the terrible creatures you wanted on the Dark Arc?
I did. I mean, it's a huge list. I wrote in the first script, in the first issue, there's this double-page splash where we see all these different monsters down in the hold of the Ark. And I wrote a huge bulleted list of monsters. It was a big list. I sent lots of reference photos. I did a lot of internet searches to see sort of the versions of these creatures I was interested in. And then I sent that to Juan, and he just kind of cut loose on it.
Now, even following you on Twitter, I could get a reference for a lot of those creatures. You're a big creature guy. Is that something that's been going on since you were a kid, or is this something that kind of developed as you got older?
No, it's been around forever. I've always been into monsters. You know, I was going to say I'd trace it back to my original Dungeons and Dragons Monster Manual, but I think it even went beyond that. I've always just been interested in monsters. I remember reading, you know, old issues of horror anthology comics, sitting around reading those, and my favorite part of every one of those comics, there's often a big splash page where the host of the comic was sitting in some haunted house or something doing some speech, and he was always surrounded by monsters. And those were always my favorite pages in those comics.
Those big splash where they're wearing like a smoking jacket and they look very sophisticated.
Often a pair of slippers and a smoking jacket, and he's just surrounded by the most horrible things.
Well, being surrounded by some of the most horrible things seems like the headspace you live in every day, my friend, because between Dark Arc and Harrow County, I don't know how you sleep at night. What is it that drives you to write horror, my man?
It's always, you know, it's not, I was going to say it's something that's always been with me, but I don't know that I always intended to be a guy who wrote horror stories. As much as I liked those kind of comics and stuff, I was not a big horror guy until a little later in life. I wanted to, at one point in my life, I wanted to be a special effects makeup artist. And that was my dream goal. And I started at that point. It's when I started kind of getting into horror to horror in general, horror movies, but also horror novels and more horror comics. And I think it just, you know, once I started doing that, it really just, it kind of took root with me.
Now, Colin, you've written for, I think, every company imaginable in the comic book verse. What's different about being with Aftershock now on this book?
You know, they're a great company to work with. I don't know if, you know, I think the biggest difference is I don't know any of the other publishers I've worked with who have taken a chance on this. It's a kind of a crazy project. It was one, you know, oftentimes what I do these days is I have a master list of story pitches. And it's a document maybe six to eight pages long with these, you know, 1 to 3 paragraph descriptions of these stories. And I send that to publishers frequently when they say, hey, we'd like to do something with you. What kind of stuff do you want to work on? And I send this document to them. So Dark Ark was in this document when I sent it to Aftershock. And frankly, I kind of thought it was filler. I was like, this is one they're not going to take. But they, you know, they jumped on it, and that was the first. It was one of the first ones they really gravitated to, and I've been talking to the folks from Aftershock since before there was an Aftershock. It's just a matter of finding the right project and the right time to work on something with them.
Now, you talk about this project being a risk taken, and I would agree with that. It is a risky project, and I love stuff like this that's so original. But have you gotten any kind of pushback from the religious right in this country? Because this is a book that I feel like might, ruffle some feathers.
You know, I don't know. I have not received any pushback. And I honestly, I'm not 100% sure that there's anyone out there that would push back too heavily on it. I'm not, you know, it's not like I'm going and saying, hey, guess who is evil? Noah, who is terrible.
You're not playing the Darren Aronofsky card.
Right. Yeah. This is just a story of happening at the same time. So, you know, and, you know, I have some friends who are very, you know, are people of faith, and I've run the story idea by them. And I admit, when I first told them about it, I was like, let's see how they take this.
Yeah.
but they've all, it's kind of a concept that people can easily understand. It's not, you know, almost everyone, religious or not, knows the story of Noah, and it's easy to accept the idea that hey, there's you know, also an ark full of monsters and evil things, and it's taking place at the same time. Now, listen, if you know the story continues for a while, who knows? Who knows? You know, I can get into some, you know, the story of Noah. He ends up being a drunken maniac towards the end of his day.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe that's part of this. Maybe that's part of Dark Ark as well. That might be the thing that pushes people over the edge. Maybe they won't like that. I don't know.
He is, of course, Cullen Bunn, writer of Dark Ark and Harrow County. You may as well call him Mr. October for the horror month. I already actually saw your tweet. What horror movie did you start the month off with?
So I watched last night. I watched The Resurrected, which is an adaptation of H.P. Lovecraft's Charles Dexter Ward, The Case of Charles Dexter Ward. It was a movie from the '90s. It's a relatively low budget horror movie, but it's one of those that it's one of the best Lovecraft adaptations I've ever seen. And it just this is a new. It just came out on Blu-ray with this new transfer, and it's really a beautiful movie now.
That's spectacular. What else I find spectacular is you and I share a fascination with Arthurian lore and tales. When did you start working on Unholy Grail?
many years ago. I found one of my notebooks recently that had the first few lines of Unholy Grail written in it. And that notebook was from about 23 and 25 years ago. So I've really, I've been thinking about this story for a long time.
Now, I got to ask you this. As somebody who loves these tales, who loves these characters, do you feel that you're kind of beholden to any of the characteristics from the original King Arthur tales, or do you feel like you have some creative liberties to take with the character of King Arthur?
Well, I think there's a room for some creative liberties. I mean, all the different legends of King Arthur, they're so different anyway. I mean, so many people have, you know, we have in our minds the sort of the iconic legend of King Arthur and Lancelot,
right,
and Guinevere and Merlin. But the legends go in so many different directions if you really start digging into them. I feel like I have a little bit of leeway. I mean, there are certain things. Lancelot, for instance, is pretty much the iconic Lancelot, I feel.
Yep.
But beyond that, yeah, I definitely take a few liberties. But I wanted with Unholy Grail, I wanted it to be true enough to Arthurian legend that even though it's such a different story, it rings true to the original tales. Even though, you know, we've got these horrible things going on, I wanted it to seem like it fit right in that universe.
Speaking of universes, you've gotten to play in just about every universe out there. Is there any one that you'd love to revisit if you were given the chance?
You mean revisit or tackle for the first time?
I'll take an answer to both, sir.
You know, I don't know. It's, you know, I've, there's just so many stories that, or so many characters when you get into the books like Marvel and DC, characters that I grew up reading and I loved. There's so many of them that I would want to tackle. And, you know, no surprise, it would be mostly the horror characters.
Right.
You know, Etrigan the Demon, Clarion the Witch Boy, Swamp Thing.
So you're saying, you're saying if DC called and said, hey, Colin, we want you to do Justice League Dark, your version, you'd be interested.
Oh, yeah. I'd definitely be interested. And you know what? I've had those conversations with them. It just all depends on the timing of it. It's you know, like you said, I got a lot going on.
Yeah.
So if I take something like that on, I want to make sure I take it on at a time where I can do it right.
Well, something that I think you took on and did right at the exact right time, and if you don't mind getting into this a little bit,
sure.
I thought your run on Magneto was one of my favorite takes on the character that's ever been printed. What inspired your Magneto?
You know, I approached that book with a very simple concept. I wanted to write a Magneto story where, as a horror story, really, and a story where Magneto was almost like this unstoppable serial killer. That was the initial idea I had. I wanted to do a very dark, very gritty, grounded take on Magneto. And those first few issues were definitely in that, you know, that's the story I was telling.
Oh, yeah.
You know, as the series progressed, it got a little bit bigger and, you know, different things were going on. I mean, they decided they were going to end, you know, destroy the world. So I had to play in that in that sandbox, which changed things a little bit. But even as the story kind of grew into this this other thing, I tried to keep the initial conceit and the initial tone of that book, true throughout.
And I guess, is there anything to be said, and you can completely pass on this one if you want to, the difference between working for a Marvel DC and working for IDW, Aftershock, or any of those other kind of smaller publishers?
Well, it's not so much working with smaller publishers versus Marvel or DC. I mean, there are differences there for sure. But, you know, the big difference comes in working on creator-owned projects versus work for hire or licensed projects. You know, when I work on a book for Marvel or DC, or I work on a licensed book for IDW or even Dynamite or any publisher like that, I'm beholden to plans they may have for the characters, plans they have for the line as a whole, they may have a Bible of items that you have, you know, things you have to follow,
right,
for the character, and that impacts, it can impact the story in small ways, or it can impact it in really big ways. And you're also working with an editor who often has, you know, story ideas that they want you, they want to try to you know, have you incorporate. If you've got a great editor, they give you good ideas and they stay out of your way. And if you've got a terrible editor, they trip you up every step of the way. And you have, you know, you have arguments constantly, and sometimes you lose those arguments. You know, when you work on creator-owned projects, it's, you know, it's my, you know, it's my project, and no one's going to trip the story up because it's, you know, it's my story, and it's, it plays in whatever universe I'm writing. And we may have editors who offer suggestions, questions to help improve the stories, but at the end of the, you know, at the end of the day, I have final say on what is, you know, what's going in that book and what's not.
So it's a little bit more of when you have control over the character versus, and I think the perfect example for this would be when you were working on Fear Itself for Marvel. There was a story that had to be told. They just wanted you to tell it in your style, but with the kind of high notes that they wanted you to hit.
Well, it's different for, you know, it's different for every story. Sometimes a company like Marvel or DC will come to you and they'll have very, very specific story beats they want you to hit. And, you know, Fear Itself, the book I did with them, Fear Itself, The Fearless, honestly, that didn't have very many big story beats. There was, you know, it was more of a goal that we wanted, they wanted to tell a 12-issue story. But at that point, they didn't know which characters they wanted to include. They didn't know what the storyline was, anything. And they just say, what would you do? You know, same with Magneto. The only note they had when they started the series was, we want to do a book about Magneto. What would you do with that book? And that, 9 times out of 10, or at least 8 times out of 10, that's the way a project like that happens. They come to you and they say, this is a book we want to, you know, this is a title. What would you do with that title or with that character? Sometimes there's a few more guidelines. If there's some very specific story they want to tell, they'll either give you lots of notes and, you know, sort of a plan for what they're trying to do. And I have to decipher where I can, how much wiggle room is in that story and where I can, you know, cut loose and where I have to make sure I'm playing ball with bigger picture items. And sometimes it's notes. Sometimes you go in for meetings at Marvel or DC's offices and we have summits and retreats where we break stories there in the room, and it comes out something nobody was even expecting at the end of that, you know, end of a couple of days conversation.
Was it a process like that that birthed X-Men Blue?
X-Men Blue, no, not really. That's, you know, before I took on X-Men Blue, I wrote Uncanny X-Men.
Yep.
And when those books were coming out, there was no, like, there was no map of what they wanted the stories to be. But we did, Jeff Lemire, Dennis Hopeless, and I, who wrote the three main X-Men books, did go to New York and visited Marvel's offices for a couple of days just to kind of talk in big picture, you know, big picture ideas of, you know, what we wanted to do with the different teams of X-Men. My team was a little bit, I had to come up with a team because at the time Jeff had picked a team of X-Men and Dennis's team was already set because it was the original five X-Men. So I had to pick a team and make sure where that would play in that universe. We didn't necessarily map out the story beats of our individual comics, but we did kind of discuss in very big, you know, very broad strokes, the story that would eventually become Inhumans versus X-Men. I mean, so this was, you know, a couple of, you know, a year and a half before Inhumans versus X-Men came out, and we mapped out that story in the room over a couple of days. Now, it changed vastly, you know, as time went on. But then when X-Men Blue came around, it was more just a call of, Uncanny X-Men's coming to an end. Your next book is X-Men Blue, and we want you to write the original five X-Men. There was, you know, beyond that, there was no story, no story plans for it. Just that's what those were the characters they wanted me to write.
When Marvel calls you and says, we want you to write a book with the five original X-Men, does that make you tingle all over?
If I'm being completely forthright, I got really angry.
Really?
I didn't like it. I didn't want to write those characters. I felt like it flew in the face of the things that I had been building with Uncanny X-Men, and which was a team I was really happy with. And a story, honestly, I would have loved to continue telling. I don't think it's a, I've said it elsewhere. Yeah, I didn't like it. I almost didn't take the book because I felt like it wasn't, and I felt like maybe it wasn't the right book for me to work on. Now that I've actually worked on it, I love those characters, and I think they're a great team. And I'm glad that I ended up swallowing my pride or whatever it was that was keeping me from embracing it, because I really enjoy the book, and it feels like writing classic X-Men stories for me. So yeah, I was very hesitant at first, but I ended up really loving these characters and enjoying the book, and I'm very glad that my editors kind of, you know, pushed me towards it a little bit. I got tingly when we started talking about I was going to write Uncanny X-Men because the title Uncanny X-Men meant something to me
right.
as I was growing up. So I was super excited about that. And that's the other, you know, there is no Uncanny X-Men right now. So I didn't want to give that title up either. You know, that was another big part of it for me in my hesitation at the time.
I got to ask you about this one. Is there ever been anyone that you've been in a room with, one of those creative meetings or camp, that you've been like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm in the room with this person?
You know, no, I don't think so. You know, it's a, I mean, I sit in room, you know, I sit in the rooms with these people, but for the most part, I've met them many times at conventions and things like that. You know, I don't think I've ever gotten starstruck at one of the retreats. You know, there are people in the room that I feel like, wow, these guys have a lot of great input, and I wonder if my input's going to be valued as much. But I don't feel like I've ever gotten, you know, just overwhelmed and starstruck by any of them. And you know, that's, you know, look, to me, the best writer at Marvel right now is Jason Aaron. And if I'd met Jason Aaron for the first time at one of those retreats, I might have been a little starstruck. But Jason and I have been friends for many, many years. So that's just sitting in a room with, you know, someone I know. So I'm okay.
Right. Well, and it's funny, you know, we've gotten to talk to, we've been fortunate enough to talk to quite a few comic book writers, and guys like Scott Snyder and Tom King and Justin Jordan have all told us, it's a brotherhood. It's a camaraderie among the creators where everyone just wants everyone making great stories. Do you get that same vibe from the comic book community?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I think it's you know, like I said, these summits or retreats, you know, often involve a lot of breaking the story. So someone sits down and they say, this is my story for whatever. And then the room as a whole starts kind of, you know, this term sounds terrible. They start tearing it apart, but it's not in a malicious way. It's not in a vindictive way. It's in a way to, let's try to make this the best story we can as a whole. So yeah, it's you know, I really do believe, you know, among the creators, it's a group of friends that I get to interact with. Usually just through emails or phone calls, but sometimes at the same time in the room.
Cullen, I got to ask you about this just because I'm a dad, and being a dad actually changed how I read comics and how I guess act as a nerd in the world. What has being a father done for you as a writer?
Well, it's definitely made me want to make sure I'm getting my deadlines met so that I keep food and shelter for my kid. You know, it's one of the things. I don't change a lot of the you know, a book like Dark Ark, for instance, is what Dark Ark would have been if I wrote it before I had a, you know, before my son was before we adopted my son. But at the same time, I really want to make sure there are books out there that kids can read and enjoy. And that, you know, that's important to me. Those books are not always the most financially successful titles, because you throw the term all ages out there and a lot of people kind of bristle because they think that means kid stuff, and that's not what it means. It just means a book that everybody could read. So, but that's why I do a book like Terrible Lizard, which was a book I did with Oni a few, you know, several years back. And that's why I really, I did a book with Marvel last year, or, well, it's still ongoing, called Monsters Unleashed.
Yep.
Which is a book that I think kids can read, especially boys can read and enjoy. And that book's important to me because the character, the superhero in the book, Kid Kaiju, is 100% my son. I mean, I drew that character in. I drew inspiration for that character from my kid. So I wanted it to be an Asian superhero that he could look up to because, you know, he's Chinese. He's 9 years old. And I want to make sure there's characters he could look up to and be inspired by when he reads comics. Not that he likes comics, because right now he wants nothing to do with them.
So. Well, I will say this, if it helps at all, my 9-year-old loves the Monsters Unleashed series. So thank you for putting a book out for everyone to be able to read together.
Yeah, no, and that's what I wanted. I wanted it to book that if you an old school fan could read it and just have a fun, rollicking adventure, but that a kid could sit by themselves if they needed to and read and not be traumatized by whatever happens on the
page. Right, yeah, they're not picking up their dad's copy of Harrow County. They're going to pick up their own copy of Monsters Unleashed.
You know, and even that, though, you know, if I look at Harrow County, for instance, to me, that's a teen book. A 12, 13, 14-year-old could read Harrow County and enjoy it and not be too traumatized by it. It might be scary in parts, but they wouldn't be, you know, terrified. The same would go for the book I did, The Sixth Gun, which I would consider, you know, it's a book that if you would let your kid watch Indiana Jones, then they can read Sixth Gun. You know, that's the kind of, you know, those books, while we never branded those as all ages books, I do feel like it could be read by a broad readership.
Now, The Sixth Gun, I have begged ever since seeing HBO's Westworld for someone to make a Sixth Gun TV series. Would that be something you would be interested in, Cullen? Because it's something I badly want to see in my life.
Well, I've seen it because, see, what people have forgotten over the years is years ago, The Sixth Gun was in development at NBC as a TV show. So they have shot one episode. The pilot was shot. And you know, I have watched that pilot numerous times now. And you know, it's something that I think, you know, is still on the table, could happen. You know, at this point, if it were to be picked up by someone, it wasn't picked up by NBC, obviously. If it were something that another, you know, studio wanted to tackle, it would pretty much have to go back to formula because the actors have all moved on to other projects and it was a TV show that was very much made with the specifications of NBC, you know, in mind, and you know, if it were picked up by say AMC, it wouldn't, you know, that show wouldn't work on AMC or HBO or anything like that. But yeah, it's something I definitely would love to see happen. It's also, like I said, I've seen the pilot now, you know, many times. That's the go-to at our at parties and stuff. We'll someone will ask to see it, and we'll watch the pilot and talk about what we liked and didn't like.
Well, once I get invited to parties at your house, we can watch it together and discuss
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
We'll move in that direction. Cullen, I've got to ask, I know you're super busy, but is there anything that you're reading right now that you would recommend to people?
You know, I read a lot in trade. I go to the comic shop, I try to, on a weekly basis. The last couple of months it's been sporadic at best. But I buy single issues, but I know myself I'm never going to read them in single issues. I have a stack of single issues that just sit there, and then when the trade comes out, I grab that because it's just easier for me and I can just dive into it. So I did read Marvel Legacy #1 in the floppy this week, and I thought that was pretty great. It's an event comic. I don't know if that's how it should be classified, but it's pretty awesome in the story they're telling. But beyond that, you know, I just started the third volume of Descender by Jeff Lemire.
Oh yeah,
which is awesome.
Big fan. Great book.
Yeah, Descender's great. I love Deadly Class and Black Science by Remender. I've been reading those again. I read them in trade, And I just read Moonshine, which I really enjoyed. So there's a lot of these image books that that I've been reading, primarily in trade, because the trades are so easy to get into. You know, I mean, usually they're $9.99 trade, and that's a pretty easy hook.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. As somebody who spends most of his paycheck at the comic shop down the street. Yes, absolutely. Cullen, you're, and I hope I'm not heaping too much praise on you here, but you're regarded as one of the best horror writers in comics today. How do you feel about the genre in general in your medium?
Horror in comics is hard, and I think a lot of people get it really wrong. It's kind of strange to me because horror fiction prose, even though it's had many ups and downs over the years, usually a good horror, you know, a horror novel can give you thrills and chills. But I think what happens is a lot of people forget that side of it, and they focus more on horror as a visual. And when they start thinking it that way, they think of movies. And the problem is you can't accomplish some of the things in a comic that you can accomplish in a movie. You know, you can't get the jump scare, for instance. Mm-hmm. You're never going to get that in a comic. It's just, it's a static form. And what I think is missed all too frequently is that comics is sort of a fusion between prose and movies. That's what you have to embrace, and I think in the past we've gotten a lot of horror comics that are really just blood and gore, and aren't scary in the least. You know, they don't haunt you in any way. It's just a quick dive into some bloody mess. But the ones that are doing it right, you know, they embrace the tone and the mood and sort of the pacing of a great horror novel even. And then incorporate these visual aspects. And I think there's a lot of, you know, I think there's a lot of really good horror comics right now, especially with, you know, so many independent books coming out.
Now, speaking of independent books coming out, you've got a Patreon up right now, patreon.com/CullenBunn, trying to get a new prose novel started, huh?
Yeah, it's just, it's something I've been wanting to experiment with Patreon for a while. So I kind of put that up there as I'm doing a new prose novel, but also, you know, it has elements of my comic work in it as well. For people who are interested in writing comics, you know, it has a lot of back behind the scenes material and scripts and pitches that I've sent out. It focuses a lot on this prose novel and short stories and other projects that I'm just working on. As I can. I'm one of those people that it seems to be when I'm the most busy is when I'm also the most interested in taking on new work.
Yeah.
When I'm really busy is when I guess the juices are flowing and new ideas are coming to me and I want to start doing, you know, doing different things. It's always when, you know, it's good and bad because it's great to have new ideas and new things you want to work on. But, you know, like I said, they hit me when I already have a fairly full plate.
Now, you're also a great follow on Twitter, @CullenBunn. Your website is I believe, CullenBunn.com?
Correct.
And people can check that out, keep up with everything you've got going on. And I'm guessing, do you occasionally check your website to see what you have going on?
I don't check my website enough. I need to make sure I'm staying on top of updating it. I don't really have the problem of figuring out what I have going on, only because I have a pretty, you know, I keep a lot of to-do lists, both handwritten and online. I'm usually pretty well on top of all the comic work. Now, I often forget doctor's appointments and school appointments and everything else. Those things are the things I miss. But the comic work, I tend to stay on top of it. And I don't usually forget that I'm working on some project. I usually have that well in mind.
Well, Cullen Bunn, it turns out, is human like the rest of us, even though he's writing more books than I can ever imagine. Dark Ark is on stands X-Men Blue is on stands. Harrow County is on stands. Sixth Gun is a book. If you haven't read it, what are you doing with your life? Pick up Cullen's work. His run on Sinestro was great. Cullen, I can't thank you enough for the time. Really looking forward to issue 3 of Dark Arc coming up next month. Can't wait to read it. Can't wait to get our hands on it. Cullen, thank you so much for the time, man.
Oh, not anytime. Happy to have talked to you tonight. I'm Cullen Bunn, and I'm a close personal friend of the Court of Nerds.
Do you like the sound of our voices more than we do? Well, make sure you listen to the podcast on thecourtofnerds.com. Also be our friends on Facebook because we need everyone we can get. And follow us on Twitter because occasionally we retweet fun stuff.